Okay, so we're going to resume the session here. Starting this morning, we had a number of talks on integrative modeling and then moved into herbaceous field trials, switchgrass and corn stover, and then looked at a newer technique, basically the cellulosic absorption index by Craig Daughtry to look at regional scale estimation of crop residue removal. Now we're going to move into a series of three talks that's going to talk about more the woody plant trials. Bill Bergeson and Mark Coleman's going to talk about what I consider a novel approach to estimating the yields. We haven't seen that earlier today, and Peter Woodbury will talk. So right now, Bill Bergeson, University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Tris. What I'll go over today is some of our experiences in Minnesota developing a poplar program as far as yield improvement and basically a crop development program in Minnesota. Obviously, the drivers on all this are pretty much apparent to everybody. Energy security, CO2 concerns, economics. Legislative action is kind of a big one in Minnesota. We have, as other states do, have a mandate currently on the electrical utilities at 25% of the total generation in the electric utilities will be renewable, whether it's wind or biomass. Actually, it's 30% for Xcel Energy in Minnesota, which is a large utility. So what are we talking about? Just to give you a primer on hybrid poplar, it's a variety of species, primarily two different sections. This is kind of the condensed set of dominant species that we use in the crossing to produce hybrids. Populus deltoides, which is really the backbone of our program in Minnesota. Populus nigra from Europe. Trichocarpa maximowitzii from Japan, and Trichocarpus from the western U.S. So if you look at the characteristics of hybrid poplar, obviously fast growing, there wouldn't be any interest in it if it wasn't somewhat fast growing. It is clonally propagated, unlike most of the herbaceous crops. Has a high potential for genetic gain as a result, and relatively easy to propagate through clonal propagation. Simply the dividing up of juvenile material into 10-inch cuttings and plant that. It's relatively easily hybridized with a lot of variation among the species. High nutrient use efficiency, a history of commercial management, at least in selected areas in the United States. Easily stored, wide harvest window, which is a pretty big deal. Actually, I think that's kind of a critical piece in some of the bioenergy procurement schemes that we've been talking about. Where you might be looking at an integration of herbaceous and woody just to ensure that in the bad years when things get a little too wet or too cold for herbaceous crop management, at least especially in the northern tier of states, that you have some portion that might be a woody crop in the mix. Variable rotations in the species that are considered for woody energy crops, whether it's poplar or willow. You can either go a short rotation coppice, which means a regeneration from the stump, so repeated harvests on the same planted material, or longer pulpwood rotations, which is typically the scenario right now for management. Just to give you an idea what this coppice system might look like, this is a graphic from Tim Volk at SUNY. Site prep planting, first year growth, coppice, in other words, is cut back, resprouts from the existing material, and then basically just harvested on repeated rotations. Oh, and that just shows the harvester at SUNY. So if we talk about yields, just one thing to clear up or make clear as far as woody crop yields, almost all yields are reported as oven dry leafless biomass. It's important just because it is above ground only, above oven dry and leafless. The important factor about leafless biomass is it's fairly low nutrient removal in the wood and the bark, at least compared with some other materials. Mean annual increment, you'll hear that battered around in the forestry circles. Basically, what that means is the total yield at the end of the plantation life divided by the years. So it's the average annual yield over the plantation life. And the important thing about that is when you're looking at yield data, it's only meaningful if the plantation's reached its maximum mean annual increment. You can plant a plantation at year one, obviously, and measure it at year three, and you really haven't even begun, and yields are very low. So it's important just to be clear on what we're talking about as far as yield data with woody crops. We're managing typically in Minnesota, at least for pulpwood rotations, 10 to 12 years. In Oregon, it's closer to 6 years. So what you really do is just measure the growth of the plantation non-destructively over the years using allometric equations, and then calculate the yield on that basis. So it's not harvested yield all the time. And unlike, maybe it's a dig at some of the herbaceous, but it's more of a heads up, almost all the yield data includes all years that were incurred in the plantation life. In other words, the yield data incorporate the very first year. As soon as you put the cutting in the ground, the clock starts ticking. This is just a shot of some poplar in the Pacific Northwest. There's a fairly large program that's being managed by Greenwood Resources as former Boise and Potlatch sites. About 30,000 acres. They get about a 7-ton per acre per year yield, roughly 15 metric tons per hectare on a 6-year rotation. So that gives you a kind of an idea of what it looks like in commercial management. This is the same kind of management in Minnesota. Longer rotations, a little slower growth, or quite a bit slower growth than what they see in the Pacific Northwest. Right now there's about 30,000 acres of hybrid poplar planted by a company called Verso Paper, which is a medium-sized paper mill in Minnesota, and they're providing roughly half of their material on dedicated plantations for that mill, for paper. They're growing on 12-year rotations. Right now, just to give you some context, the realistic manageable yield using existing clones is about 3.5 tons, oven dry tons per acre per year, which again would be up in that roughly 8 metric tons per hectare. We have seen 5 tons on better clones on our research plots that are in commercially managed stands. So these aren't manicured research stands, but we've demonstrated we could see 5 tons, again, in that 10 to 12 metric tons per hectare per year. And 6 tons is certainly possible, as I'll discuss later. Plantation sites are all on agricultural lands. Very little success with converting forested sites, and we don't even bother doing that. The program in the Pacific Northwest is all on irrigated wheat, and we are primarily on medium quality to poor quality agricultural sites in Minnesota. Land rent, just to give you some context, about $50 to $100 per acre per year. So two primary sites of our interest is central Minnesota and northwestern, which has a very high CRP signup. So really what we're doing in our area is a fairly straightforward crop development and management research program, starting from the ground up. This is really a crop domestication program just from the very beginning. Genetic improvement is a big part of our program. It's one of the largest and most successful breeding programs in the world, and certainly in North America. And also we have done some research on plantation management. Weed control is a big part of it. These species have to be aggressively managed as far as particularly weed control. Plant spacing is another issue that's still out there, and fertilization research has been a part of our program. So I'll just talk briefly about some of the genetic improvement work that we've gone on, that we've undertaken in the last decade. Screening of new parent material is always part of it. Again, this is just the same model that's used in corn and soybeans, roughly 50 years ago. Collection of new parent material, hybridization, screening, and typically requires a minimum of 8 years and really more like 10 years. There's a lot of genetic variation to capitalize on. This is just results of some tests that we did on some open pollinated cottonwood, which is Populus deltoides. Just to give you an idea, on the y-axis is an index of volume yield. You can see a lot of variation from material you wouldn't even want to use in any breeding program to a few high flyers. So we're starting with kind of teasing out what the native resource looks like. You can see the breeding sequence is fairly long-term. You've got breeding in year one. You've got to propagate it in years two and three, get out field trials. The whole progression takes a while. And really, realistically, to develop a commercial clone, you're looking at about 10 years. So I'll quickly just go through the steps that we're looking at. This would be a typical archive that we'd have of native Populus deltoides. That's the male, the pollen from the males. These are the females that are potted up. What we've done is actually a fairly innovative approach that has allowed us not to have to go into a lot of detailed bottle grafting and a lot of things that have been the bane of poplar breeders for many years. We've used a what we call a plant and pot system, where we encourage the root development on the females while keeping the tops cold, which has been a real boon to us, because we get good success without a lot of effort. These are our breeding hoods. That's what it looks like if you've been successful in the breeding operation. And then this is our chia pet stage, where you have to tease out all the individual seeds from those catkins to get the individuals. Each one of those is a potential commercial clone. Then you tease those out further into cells, plant them in a nursery, evaluate them for a couple years for disease. This is leaf disease in poplar, melampsera rust, and septoria canker. So you're in the nursery stage. You've got it all ready to go out into field research. Now you've got to propagate it all to go into field research, replicated material. This is what it looks like as we start to get ready for our field trials. As you can tell, it's not for the faint of heart. It's a lot of logistical issues as far as propagating that much material and keeping track of it all. But we have, as I mentioned, some of the largest trials in the world on this subject. Typically, we'll propagate about 100 families a year, with 30 clones within each family, so 3,000 clones. When you add everything all up with parents and controls and everything else, you'll be looking at over 3,000 clones. So roughly 10 acres of monumented trials each year. So this is just to give you an idea of what the sites look like. That's the first year. That's after 1 year of growth. This is the second year of growth. And here's what I really want to concentrate on, just the results, the nuts and bolts results of what we've seen so far in the breeding program. The bar on the right-hand side is what we call NM6, which is the best commercial hybrid in the Lake States that's available to the commercial programs. The bars to the left of the rightmost bar are all materials that we have propagated and we have bred in our program. The dark bar is the mean of the family of 30 individuals. The highest, the lighter blue bar is the top clone in each of those families. So you can see we've already generated 10 potential clones that handily beat the commercial currently available commercial hybrid by a factor of about 1.8 times the commercial control. And again, this is in volume or biomass. And just to prove that I'm not lying, this is a completely different site. Same kind of graph, NM6 on the right-hand side with new families, new clonal material developed in our program. So the point is, with a concerted crop domestication program and woody crops, you can make a lot of headway in a reasonable time frame. But you can't do it with just without really going through fundamental steps. Right now, we have roughly 250,000 clones produced out of our program. And between our program and that going on in Oregon, we have a real nice basis as far as a material for the future that could be deployed nationally. We've also gotten into fertilization trials. You can see an aerial photo of one of our fertilization sites. Obviously, it's the same. The next question that comes up is, once you've got good genes, what do you do with them out in the field? And we've tried to tease out, with some success, the response surfaces for poplar, at least in our area. What I see this as fairly important in the long haul, in that as we've experienced not more than a year ago, nitrogen costs are heavily tied to natural gas. You know, so that whole thing, trying to decouple or at least at a minimum really understand what those nitrogen responses are going to be critical down the road. It has the potential to really affect economics, production economics, fairly significantly, especially if we're starting to return, if we ever do return to the $13 to $15 per million BTUs natural gas, that starts to really factor in on the economics of production. So we did a lot of work just trying to characterize nutrient relationships. 5 minutes?
A little less.
Okay. Trying to characterize nutrient relationships, get into all the, just some fundamentals of what this crop desires, and then put out some trials in fertilization. So you can see we got some fairly good responses on a select number of sites, but the reality is what researchers never show you is those sites that didn't respond. It's wholly uninteresting, but the reality is there are a lot of sites that did not respond. So trying to tease that out and trying to get a handle on what those responses are on nutrient poor sites, but then especially which sites are adequate and may not require any fertilization at all. We did some tweaking with a SPAD meter, found that to work fairly well. I'll just jump through that fairly quick. So the conclusions on our work, nitrogen is clearly the most limiting element. We don't start until the plantations reached a minimum threshold of canopy closure in our area, 20 square feet of basal area. And we've seen responses roughly 20% to even 70% above the controls. So what do we really need to do? I think the national needs are to nationalize the Minnesota or Oregon program. There's really no shortcuts. I wish there were. Genomics don't seem to quite have it together enough to allow us to use them in a breeding context as far as teasing out the relationships, particularly in yield, and even probably some more basic traits we could use it, but in general for our program to make it more efficient through genomics doesn't appear to be quite there yet. Clone testing of all available materials. At most, all we really need is two breeding centers. I think that's adequate for the whole country. And then just distribute that material out to cooperators. Field tests, there's no way to get around that. We need to really deploy this material out on a wide variety of sites to see what the performance would be. Again, the same kind of thing that I just described, site productivity, fertilizer responses. We're even so far down the learning curve, spacing studies really are needed on new clones. We did some research recently that showed the relationship between spacing and yield is not as clear as what we'd ideally like it to be. There are some good things about that in that we can tweak the economics a bit in our favor, but that work still is needed to be done for woody crops. So with that, I think I'll close. I had a bunch more, but I'll put that in the paper.
Any questions for Bill? How many years of herbicide management do you need?
If you manage well, if the herbicides are effective, which generally they are, 2 years typically. What we do is use a pre-emergent and then rely on cultivation the first year. And then the trees typically are too high to really effectively cultivate. So then one application in the spring of the second year. And then you're pretty much, if you've managed well and you've got good clones, you should be have captured the site enough that weed control is not the major issue then. If you do it wrong, there are, you can be in a loop where you'll be doing it for 5 years.
So. Any other questions?
When you talk about the 10-12-year mean annual increment, at what point does that sort of plateau? How many years after 12 can you go?
Oh, how many years after 12 could you go? The issue, at least with well, let me... The yield starts to plateau, the annual yield starts to plateau at about year three. So in other words, you've got probably all of the canopy that you're going to get at year three. Year three to 10 to 12 is, you know, kind of a steady state yield phase. After that, what we've seen is the issue really becomes disease and some biomass loss, at least on the current clones that we have. We've seen some indications that that will change over time, but right now the rotation is really limited because of loss in biomass, as in some certain number of tops that start to break out of stands that are under management now.
So you're saying you're a 2-year window from 10 to 12?
12 to 14, I would say, is when you really should be getting a harvest schedule together, yeah.
Can you say a little more about disease? Is it Septoria that's really the biggest challenge, and have you seen a difference in going from small plots to some of the larger plantations?
Septoria is by far the major challenge. The reason being is Melampsera rust is the other one, and Marcinina is another one that can cause problems, but those show up. If a clone's susceptible, those show up and basically decimate the clone early, so it's easy to select for. Septoria is not quite as obvious. So we have to deal with that in a little longer term. As far as the spatial effect, we don't see any real significant spatial effect. We'll see Septoria on what we call our yield blocks, which are, you know, say a 7x7 planting, 7x7 tree, 49 tree block. We'll see Septoria in those blocks just as readily as you will see it in a very large, you know, 200-acre plantation.
Yeah. One last question, then we need to move on.
What's your typical survival from year 3 to 12, for example?
Virtually 100%. Once from a cutting, you'll get about 95% survival with clones that we consider commercially viable. You very, very rarely lose a tree during that, once a tree is up and running. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.